Good morning, everyone. For those that don't know, my name is Cathy Duffy, and I am welcome to this week's Devon Insight telephone speaker event. I hope you're all well and have enjoyed the lovely sunshine we have had over the weekend. And today I am delighted to be able to welcome Judith Potts, the founder of Esme's Umbrella, as our speaker today. And on that note, I am going to hand over to you, Judith. Thank you very much for being here today.
Oh, no, it's a great pleasure. Thank you for inviting me. And good morning, everybody, from a very grey and dismal London where I am. I am Judith Potts, and I am the founder of Esme's Umbrella, which is the campaign to raise awareness of Charles Bonnet syndrome. I founded Esme's Umbrella in November 2015 at the House of Commons in memory of my mum. My mum was the Esme of Esme's Umbrella. And when she was in her early 90s, she was a very independent lady, lived on her own. She had glaucoma, but I had not realized how advanced it had become. She was very good at hiding that. But one day when I was leaving her flat, she suddenly said to me, "I do wish these people would get off my sofa." Well, as you can imagine, I didn't know what on earth to say to that, because there wasn't anybody sitting on her sofa. While I took a deep breath, she said, "And there is a tear-stained Edwardian street child who follows me everywhere, and a hideous gargoyle-like creature that jumps from table to chair, not to mention the times the whole room or garden morph into an alien face." So I did take my deep breath, and I said, "Well, there isn't anything here." And she said, "Well, I know. They do go, the people on my sofa, if I tap them on their shoulders." She was quite matter-of-fact about it, and at that time wasn't particularly frightened. So I left her to it. I went home, and with the most enormous piece of luck, that very day, I read, buried in the health pages of the newspaper, a tiny paragraph about a condition which was caused by loss of sight, and it was called Charles Bonnet syndrome. And my mom could have written it. So I rang her up and said, "Look, don't worry. I know what you have. You have something called Charles Bonnet syndrome. Don't worry about it. I'll talk to your ophthalmologist and all will be well." And that's when it all went wrong. Her ophthalmologist, who'd better remain nameless, refused point blank to discuss Charles Bonnet syndrome, to the extent that at her next appointment, he sent a junior doctor with strict instructions not to discuss it. He wouldn't tell me why he'd never given us any warning. He just would not talk about it. Her GP never heard of it, thought I was being fanciful, and her optometrist had never heard of it either. So at that point, I did what we're always told not to do. I went onto the internet, and there I found Dr., now Professor this year, Dominic Fitch at King's College London. Dominic is now my medical advisor, then and still now, the sole globally acknowledged expert in CBS. I was writing a health column for The Telegraph at the time, and I thought, you know, I think I ought to write something about this. So I went to see Professor Fitch and asked him if he thought this is what my mum had. He said, "Yes, I do, exactly what she's got." He explained to me that what happens when you have sight is that there are constant messages running from the retina in the eye to the visual cortex in the brain. As sight diminishes, those messages slow down or stop entirely. But for some reason we don't understand yet, the brain doesn't stop. The brain fires up and creates its own images. And what is seen depends on which part of the brain is firing. He also stressed, and I would like to stress today, that Charles Bonnet syndrome is not a mental health condition. It is entirely due to loss of sight. If there was no sight loss, there'd be no Charles-Bonnet syndrome. So having discussed this with him, I began to write columns about Charles-Bonnet syndrome and the fact that nobody knew about it. And I continued, and I kept thinking maybe I ought to do something, but it wasn't until after Esme died that I received an email from a professor at a university in New York who told me what had happened to her mum. Her mum had been hallucinating worms and slugs on her food and in her drink. And the doctor said, this woman is demented. We have to put her in a dementia unit. The family thought the woman was completely sane, but they went along with the doctor. This woman could not get beyond the worms and slugs on her food and in her drink. There was no one who'd heard of CBS, no one to reassure her. She stopped eating and drinking and died. And that was it. I thought, we can't have this. So I launched Esme's Umbrella with three aims. One was obviously to raise awareness of the condition, both within the healthcare world of doctors, nurses, social workers, health visitors, whoever it might be, and also out into the community to people who were likely to develop it. And that I continue to do as best I can. My second aim was to find ways of helping people, supporting them with information. So I have a website I now have a managing CBS information pack, which I can send out. And I formed Esme Room support groups. And these were groups where people with Charles-Bonnet syndrome could get together over a cup of tea, cup of coffee, glass of wine, exchange experiences, and help each other through with coping strategies and just that reassurance that A, it's not a mental health issue, and B, they're not alone. Well, then along came COVID-19, so those all had to close, and we morphed them into Esme's Friends, which is, as we're talking today, on the telephone or online, again, a support for people. On a weekly, fortnightly, or monthly basis, it depends on which charity is running the group and what people within the group want. So they can just chat to each other. And also make friends, local friends, terribly important that there's somebody around the corner who, once we are allowed out from house arrest, you can go and chat to and not have to wait for the telephone call. So that's one thing. And the third thing is research. I am not a charity. I am a campaign. So I can't raise money. But very soon after I launched, the big charity Fight for Sight, which does fund a lot of research, came to me and said, would you like us to hold a restricted fund for you under our auspices, into which money for Charles-Bonnet syndrome research can be put? And I thought, this is brilliant. So that is what I have done. And I have a Just Giving page. And actually only yesterday and today, to celebrate someone's birthday, people are putting money through Just Giving. And that's really good news. At the moment, Fight for Sight is doing a big campaign about Charles-Bonnet because we need much more money. The research that's happening at the moment is in Oxford and Cardiff and some other places. I'll go into that, but I will just explain that initially I took my begging bowl out and managed to get some money, gave it to Fight for Sight, and we put out a call for a researcher. And this was 5 years ago. We got one response. This was how little anybody knew, understood, or even cared about Charles-Bonnet syndrome. And this came from the University of Newcastle. So we talked to Professor Fitch, and he said, yes, absolutely, I will work with them. And so what they did, and we are going to have the results quite soon, they did a study of brains, and they compared the brains of people with sight loss and Charles-Bonnet syndrome against those with sight loss who don't develop it, because there are some. And if we can find out the difference, that will be an enormous help to research in the future. At the same time, at the same university, there was some research funded by the Macular Society, and that was looking at brain sort of intervention, magnetic brain stimulation, to see whether that would switch off the firing cells. And that did very well, but it was a tiny study, not enough people, and so we can't hope to take that any further until we get some more money and can do a second phase. So the years went by, and my restricted fund built. And then last year, we put out a call for another researcher, and this time we got five, which was fantastic. So we've split my fund, and other big charities like Blind Veterans have come in as well. And Oxford University, I'm very excited about this, is going to do some research carrying on from Newcastle. And they are going to use a very sophisticated machine to look at the brain and see if there is a chemical introduced into the brain before one of these hallucinations or an entire episode of hallucinations occurs. They are also going to look at a higher pathway from the eye to the brain. Now, I'm not a doctor. I'm not medically trained, so that's the only way I can describe this to you. So that is very exciting. It's the Nuffield School of Neurosciences at Oxford. The other half of the money has gone to Cardiff University, and there they are going to look at whether peripheral vision, basically whether it's holding memories or whether it's more suggestible. That, again, is as far as I can explain that. So those two are very, very big and serious projects, and I am just delighted about that. Then we have some more. Now, one of the things I've always held very close to my heart is my concern about what happens to children, because I know from talking to adults how utterly terrifying some of these hallucinations are, what distress they cause, and how they interrupt life. And for a long, long, long time, nobody took any notice of Charles-Bonnet syndrome in adults and totally ignored it in children. Now, Professor Maria Musaji at Moorfield, she is a consultant ophthalmologist at both Moorfields and Great Ormond Street, the Children's Hospital in London, and she's also a genetic researcher at the Francis Crick Institute. She's been a huge support to me, and she has done a piece of work to establish prevalence of CBS in children, which is great. So we now have it there. We know it happens. So she and Dr. Lee Jones are now going to go on to do the second part of the research, which is to talk to the children, talk to the families, and find out the real impact this has on the child and on the family. We know that around about the age of 11, children start to talk about the hallucinations. We also know that when you get to university, for students, these hallucinations get in the way and they pull out of their courses because they can't cope. We need to do something about that. The other thing that we established was at the beginning of lockdown last year, my helpline, which is now answered for me by the eye health team at the RNIB, I gave it to them a couple of years ago because there were just too many calls. I think I was a victim of my own success, and I simply couldn't do it, as Esme's umbrella is only me. They told me that the calls to the helpline had quadrupled. And I said, well, you know, that's very interesting because so has my inbox and also my Facebook page. People are telling me that their Charles-Bonnet syndrome is worse. And not only that, but what they see is much more frightening. And we decided we needed to do some research. So Professor Mukherjee has done a piece of research to prove what we already suspected, that isolation, stress, and actually fever, if you get a fever, it gets worse too, of COVID-19 has made Charles-Bonnet syndrome worse. So that is now published in the BMJ Open Ophthalmology. It is there forever. And quite amazingly, she's put my name on the paper, which is terribly exciting for someone who has no medical background whatsoever. So that has happened. Now, the other thing is, there are two other things. One is when an hallucination appears, it, even if you know perfectly well that the tiger, the snake, the gushing water is a hallucination, you instinctively react physically, and that quite often leads to falling over. Now, we thought, well, is there anything we can do to help this? And I was approached by a PhD student, actually her professor, from Manchester University. And they said they'd like to do a study. So I managed to get some funding for this. And they are going to see what, if anything, we can do to help people not to fall over. So that's important. And the last piece of research is probably my favorite, actually. There's a young man called Dr. Amit Patel. And Amit was a trauma doctor at University College Hospital in London until a hemorrhage behind his eyes took his sight. Not only does he have Charles-Bonnet syndrome very badly, but he's obviously had to get used to no sight. He has a guide dog called Kika. And Kika has begun to warn Amit before the hallucination appears. He sees particularly horrible things. Now, when I discovered that, I thought that was very interesting, mostly because when I had my column, I wrote a great deal about the medical detection dogs. These are the dogs that sniff cancer way before any tests do. They are also alert dogs for conditions like diabetes, like epilepsy, Addison's disease. They can tell because there is a change in the odor of the person's skin. And at that point, they run off, get the medication, bring it back. The person takes it, and everything is sorted out, so they don't get a fit or whatever it might be. So I thought, that's interesting. And I called Dr. Claire Guest, who leads the charity, and I explained to her about Charles-Bonnet syndrome. And I said, do you think this is possible? And she said, yes, I do. Absolutely possible. I think there is something happening in the brain, which ties up with the Oxford theory. So let's see what we can do. So they have just finished the first phase of their training dogs to sniff COVID. They will be at airports and ports and such like places. And they have now started their research on Charles-Bonnet syndrome, which is very, very exciting. So all of that has been happening. And then in the middle of lockdown last year, I was approached by the Coronation Street team who asked me if I would help them because they would like to run a storyline about Charles-Bonnet syndrome. Well, I honestly thought all my Christmases had come at once. I was so thrilled. I said, of course I will help, absolutely. So I was sworn to secrecy, and I worked with the team and with the wonderful actor Richard Hawley, who plays Johnny Connor, a character that has multiple sclerosis, which leads to sight loss, which leads to Charles-Bonnet syndrome. And just recently, a couple of weeks ago, the first episode aired. A week later, it was the episode in which Johnny received the diagnosis. after that, the next 3 days, my helpline received over 1,800 calls. Yeah. I think Charles-Bonnet syndrome has finally come out of the shadows and is standing there center stage. And I could not be more grateful to ITV, the Coronation Street team, and the wonderful, wonderful Richard Hawley, who asked if he could be patron of Esme's Umbrella. And I announced that last week. So I think that's brought you all up to date. If there are any questions, I would love to take them. If I've left anything out, let me know.
I don't think you have, Judith. That was absolutely amazing. Thank you. We did have a question that was put through by email by one of the people that have joined us today. So if I could just read out what she said to us. And thank you for the caller who did that. What she says was that over the years, visual images have popped up uninvited in my head. They may be part of the Charles-Bonnet syndrome. As my sight has deteriorated, the images have gone from being indistinct gargoyle types to a much clearer focus and colourful images such as details of people's faces, often wincing or in pain. The smiley faces are presumably popping up in someone else's head. Over the past 2 to 3 years, however, those images have receded, and instead the brain seems intent on sending me images that cause anxiety, such as car crashes or other mishaps. These are often in great detail, as if my sight was able to see every aspect clearly. Three friends have separately been involved in car crashes that have impacted on their lifestyles in recent years, so I realise my brain may just be assessing experiences it has heard about. So for that person's kind of experience, does that sound like something that you hear from other people? This lady was curious to know whether this is experienced by other people and whether there is any evidence that as the sight deteriorates, the brain gets bored, which I think you've covered really clearly. This lady is in her mid-60s and has glaucoma for about 18 years and has lost about 45% of her sight, which with glaucoma is likely to be peripheral vision. So does that sound kind of familiar to you?
Professor Fitch always says it needs to be over 60% of sight. But I don't think it's very easy always to ascertain exactly how much sight someone has lost. What she describes, I have heard before. I had, there are two quotes which I've been using, both of which come from people I spoke to during lockdown last year. One was a lady who had lost her sight 6 years before. And she had just 6 years on developed Charles-Bonnet syndrome. And she said the most amazing thing was that after 6 years, she could see color, which she had almost forgotten about. And she said it's watching the most beautiful gardening documentary. You can see the colors and the shapes of the flowers, the petals, the trees, the bushes. You can see a drop of rain on a leaf. It's so vivid and clear. The only problem, she said, is that I can't choose when I see it, and it can get in the way of everyday life. Right to the other extreme of a man who said to me, it is like watching a horror film that I would never have chosen to watch, and I cannot switch it off. So I think what she's talking about, the car crash, is probably fall into the Hammer horror film mode.
Yeah.
The one thing that I didn't say that perhaps I ought to have done is that I talked about fever, I talked about anxiety, stress, and isolation making it worse, and that is very much so. And we're all waiting to see whether after, as I say, we're released from house arrest and life returns to some form of normality, whether these people with really bad Charles-Bonnet syndrome, whether it reverts. We don't know. We just don't know. The other thing is that there is medication that people take for other conditions which make Charles-Bonnet syndrome worse, because one of the side effects of this medication is hallucinations. So if you have Charles-Bonnet syndrome and you are taking this other medication for something else, you get a sort of double whammy. Now, they're the old-fashioned tricyclic antidepressants.
Yeah.
It's gastric ulcer and indigestion medication, which tend to end with the prazole word. Those kind, but there are lots of different ones, and the end, the last syllable is P-R-A-Z-O-L-E. So there are lots of beginnings of that, but that's the last syllable. Urinary incontinence medication and atropine eye drops, which are used for glaucoma. I think they may be used for something else, but I just know they're used for glaucoma. And I think, for my mother, now I know this, Professor Fitch really has only just finished his piece of research on this. We realize that they make it worse too, and I think there is an alternative which could be used. But I think it's quite important to know about those. And there is medication which can be tried if the hallucinations are really too difficult to cope with and they really are interfering in everyday life. You can go to your GP and ask. Either I can send you the list, that it's only a few things. It's medication that's used for things like dementia and epilepsy, but it does not mean the person has developed these conditions. It simply means that this is what works for some people, but not for everybody. And until we can actually get a CBS-specific medication, we are a little bit stuck. The coping strategies are on my website. They're things like you have to reach out towards it. You have to shunt the brain into another gear, really. And it's different for everybody. Some people find clapping hands, clicking fingers, standing up, sitting down, switching the lights on and off, walking around, that kind of thing. But to go back to what your lady was saying in her email, it does sound to me like Charles-Bonnet syndrome. And I think sometimes it starts with fairly simple, not always, because everybody's experience is different. But I have heard people say it started with fairly simple patterns and colors and blobs, and it carries on to get more, more vivid, in the sense that you see animals and birds and insects and people. And the people are often in costume of some kind. Medieval is quite popular, if that's the right word. A military uniform. So I know one person that sees a Second World War pilot standing in the corner of the room, and you can see the weariness. He's obviously just come off mission. You can see the weariness in the face, the dirt, the sweat. It's just extraordinary.
It is, and it's from what I've heard from people who have been describing their symptoms to me, is that they are so vivid. So real, so realistic, and it can be anything, as you described, from characters, from people, from things that you know that can't be real,
animals, that the floor disappears and it's they feel like they're going to fall into a lake or into the sea. They can be very, very extreme to other people who just see kind of like shadowy figures, not distinct or moving light sources. So I think you're right that, you know, it can be everybody's experience is going to be
slightly different.
Yeah. Fascinating. Okay, Tracy and Louise, can we open up the calls and just see if there's anybody that has kind of any questions or any comments they'd like to make? My voice is going. I apologise for that.
Oh, dear.
If I didn't know better, I'd say I have hay fever.
Oh, right.
I think it's because there's quite a lot of blossom out around my house. And lovely as it is.
Beautiful, yes. The blossoms are just starting, aren't they?
Okay, here we go.
Could I say something?
You certainly can, who's here?
This is Sarah from South Devon, and I think there should be more publicity about this. A leaflet should be available at optometrists and the eye department of the hospital, surely.
I agree with you more, but unfortunately getting people to do that is very difficult. The problem with the optometrists is that on the whole, they're there to look at your eyes, but they're trying to sell the glasses. It's a commercial enterprise. And what I would like is for the optometrists to become more, which they're meant to be, more like the GPs of the eye sector, in which case we could do that. I've tried the GPs. They won't have them. People are very territorial, and they just don't like anybody kind of trying to steal their patients away from them, which is absurd. You're absolutely right. I'm going to try this year to get some posters printed if I can find someone to fund this. The other problem is that I have no funding at all, so I have to go out and find funding to do anything. And I'm going to try and get some posters done, and I'm going to try my local hospital and see whether they will do it. Now, Moorfields is quite good. They're not brilliant, but they're quite good. But, yes, you're absolutely right. This is what we need.
Yes, because even doctors haven't heard of it, as you've said. And I think especially the eye department, surely could the RNIB not do something about it?
Well, not really, no. I don't think so. I mean, they've got leaflets and things, but they have other things to spend their money on. Don't ask me what that is. I don't know. But it's a question of me doing it, really. And I will. It's just getting the funding. You see, everything is terribly expensive.
On the radio, there's a program called You and Yours. And all sorts of different things. I don't know if you've ever heard it.
I know you and yours very well.
Yes, if somebody there could contact the producers and say, you know, people don't seem to know about Charles Bonnet, perhaps you could mention it.
You know, you're right all the way through, and this is what I keep doing, but nobody is interested. Now, I am hoping that with Coronation Street, this may change. And I will try my usual round of producers again and see whether they this time might be interested. I've tried all the programs you can think of, television and radio, Woman's Hour, the whole lot, and nobody is interested.
Oh, I believe it.
Well, I'll tell you why. I think it's because In the words of perhaps a journalist, it's not a sexy subject. I don't mean sexy in the sense of how you would interpret it normally. You don't die from it. So there is a phrase that they use, if you bleed, breathe.
And you don't. So people don't. They're not interested.
No.
I had a piece in, I wrote a piece for the Yorkshire Post last summer, which had a good response.
Well done.
And the Independent wrote a piece for me last November, I think it was. There was a piece in the Express and the Mirror just recently. I'm hoping that one of the writers on the Daily Mail health pages is writing something this week.
Oh, good.
But getting pieces, I mean, I'm very happy always to write pieces, which I've been doing over the years, for as many online and newspapers that will take it, but they're just not interested. I think it's partly because they can't be bothered to read the explanation, and the explanation has to be quite long because you have to explain what it is.
Yes.
And I think that's where it sort of goes a bit wrong, because they look at it and they think, oh, this is obviously very rare, so it doesn't matter. But you see, it's not, because we think there are probably a million people in this country alone.
Well, I tell people as often as I can, you know, about this disease. And, of course, it's all news to them. But I think you're doing a fantastic job. And well done to you.
Well, that's very
all your
kind.
Hard
Thank
work
you.
And time and all the rest of it. And long may you carry on to do that.
Thank you. Well, you know, I'm 72 in May. So, I'm carrying on for a few more years.
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
There's a lot of noise going on in your background. I don't know what's going on in the office. It's probably not you. It's probably Devon inside.
We're trying to work out where the interference is coming from, but if I could just remind everyone that you're all unmuted at the moment. So if you have TVs or radios or conversations going on in the background, it's making the line indistinct.
Anyway, you were going to give me a phone number, were you?
Hello?
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 I don't have anything, but I'd like to give you some good news. Some years ago, I had a weird episode with my eyes, and I'm an MS patient. And I went to the local optometrist, and he diagnosed Charles Bonnet syndrome. So I've known about it for some years, and he's called McShaw, and he's in Sidmouth. And anybody who's around this area, you've got problems.
Oh, that was wonderful. Yes, because I've had it in the past with Charles Bonnet, but thank goodness
somebody
it's not
got
constant.
A radio on and it's interfering.
That, well, I'm very pleased to hear that at least one optometrist knows. Actually, I have to say I've done a lot of work with the college
of optometrists there. But he was really super because I was seeing patches, but I've been a patch worker, funnily enough, and that was the odd thing, but I am registered blind, but I can in fact see a certain amount. But it's wonderful that this guy, I was amazed that he knew about it, so I then read about it, and I just call it CBS, and I write that down when I go into hospital about the things that are wrong with me and they want to know, and I say, I've got CBS. So they won't think I'm mad if I do something weird, but nothing else has happened. I had one big bout, and it's stopped now. So it could be due to the fact that I have 15 forms of medication. So it could be something to do with that.
It
and I would
be.
Like anybody who's interested in is medication causing it, and I could help them, perhaps, in their research.
Well, thank you very much indeed. We will remember that. Thank you.
Okay. At this point, can I just say that if there's anybody that would like more information about Esme's umbrella, then you can either look on the website and just Google Esme's umbrella. It will come up at the top of your search. Esme's is E-S-M-E...
apostrophe S,
and then the umbrella in the usual spelling, and that will bring you straight to the website. Or you can contact us at Devon Insight on 01392 876 666, and we'd be happy to give you the details of all the different ways that you can contact Esme's umbrella. And I know that I have some printed out information that I can share with people as well. So just if you would like more information, then please feel free to contact us. We'd be happy to get that across to you. Are there any more questions?
Yes.
Hello.
Hi,
I'm Philip from Newton Abbott, and I just
wondered,
can I just say, I think you're doing marvellous work, and you're clearly getting Charles Bonnet known more and more to the wider world, and this can only grow, and it's terrific to hear that you have now several researchers working on the subject. I guess from my point of view, in the end, the thing that would be really good to know is what's actually happening mechanically inside my head to produce this. During the lockdown, my wife and I have been shielding since last February, and we still are now. So I have, I'd say, 99.9% sight loss from glaucoma, and as of the last three years. And I've suffered particularly badly with CBS during this lockdown. Prior to that, all the things that I was still managing to do, which of course included visiting just about every cafe and restaurant in Newton Abbott on a reasonably regular basis, just to you know, help to take my mind off my own troubles, and in the company of my wife, which was nice. But of course, the world has gradually narrowed in and narrowed in
to the
extent where just about everything that I was doing, I was doing some charity work and one or two other things, all gone. So I finished up on the sofa at home, talking books, music, which is great. Without it, I think you'd go mad. But at that point, the Charles Bonnet started to develop even more. There was less and less reality going on for me to distract me. So the Charles Bonnet got worse. In most cases with me, it's reality. Nothing nasty, no horrible goblins and things like that. But reality, traffic on the move, loads of lorries, rides on open-top buses, stuff like that, absolutely real. But just recently, I experienced a type of Charles Bonnet that I have never experienced before, and I hope I don't get it again. One of the things I'm still able to do unaided is find my way to the local post box.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, I knew where it was when I could see. And so that helps me enormously with the aid of my long cane to find my way there and back without actually seeing the route. But recently, when I went to the post box, I started to come back and Charles Bonnet took over and superimposed a cheeky route map into my vision, and was trying to send me in a totally different direction to the one that I knew was correct in order to get me home. And I just wondered whether that sort of Charles Bonnet was common.
Yes, it is. I was speaking to someone not so long ago, and she got up in the night to go to the loo, went to the bathroom. When she came out, the whole house had changed. And there were a series of obstacles, like those big barriers, in front of her. And she had
absolutely no idea which way to turn. And fortunately, her husband was there, so she called out and he came and rescued her. I also know somebody else who was gardening, and she was kneeling down, and when she stood up, the entire garden turned into a sort of Alice in Wonderland of doors. Big doors, little doors.
Yes.
Again, she had no idea. She lived on her own, so she, the only way she could get back into the house was to crawl, feeling the path that she knew took her to the back door. So she did that, crawled to the back door, opened the door, went in and thought, oh, I need a cup of tea. Went into the kitchen, and the entire kitchen was covered in what she described as white tablecloths with huge blue flowers. So she was totally disoriented. So yes is my answer. That can happen. And maps are very common. Maps, musical notes, words, numbers, all of that is very common. Totally disorienting.
Yes, yes. It can be scary, and very scary when that sort of thing happens.
We have no idea why that would suddenly have happened to you. We've no idea at all. There has been no research. I think, you see, the problem is 1760 was when Charles Bonnet documented what was happening to his grandfather, whose name was Charles Lulis. His grandfather had very bad cataracts, which were inoperable in those days. Charles Bonnet was a very clever guy. He knew that his grandfather was perfectly sane, and therefore it must be something to do with his eyes. So he documented all that. Nothing much happened until the 1930s. When somebody documented a few patients with a similar thing and called it Charles Bonnet syndrome. Then we do another leap to the 1990s when Professor Fitch began his work on all types of visual hallucinations. And my theory is,
this is very interesting.
The reason there's been no research is that the doctors, because when most people develop it, they instantly think they've got a mental health condition, if they've never heard of it. And in those days, no one has ever heard of it. So they thought they had a mental health condition. If they said anything to their families stuck them in a corner, and the mad old woman in the corner waving in the air was probably not mad at all. But because nobody said anything to the doctors assumed it was rare, that it only happened to the elderly, and we know what they think about the elderly, including myself. And for some reason, they got it into their heads that it would all go away after 18 months, and that people only saw very beautiful images.
Yes.
So that is the battle that I have been fighting. We have busted, or Professor Fitch has busted all those myths. We know that it's any age, that it doesn't go away necessarily. It can do for some people, but it doesn't necessarily go away. That you do see things which are horrible, and that it is not rare. It's incredibly common.
Yes, yes.
But
I wonder that... The
research is done.
Sorry. I obviously, because I see it a lot, I think about it a lot.
Of course.
And one of the things I've wondered was whether any of these images that I see, and mine are normally flashing by left to right on a... I wondered whether they were things that I'd seen in the past, and my brain is actually stored and is reproducing, but were not necessarily things that my real waking conscious mind was looking at the time. But nevertheless, the brain was storing them anyway.
I think that's right. As far as I can understand it from Professor Fitch, you store away everything that you see. In fact, you never forget anything, he tells me. But anyway, it's all stored away in there. And also, what you have to remember, too, is that every book you've ever read
you have created images for all the characters in the book, the scenes. You've created those images and they're stored away too.
Yes, of course.
So
yes.
Every film that you've watched, there will be images from the film or television or a radio play. So you've got so much in there, so much data, if you like, in there for the brain to draw on. Why it chooses what it chooses, we have no idea.
No. That's very interesting. I've become an avid reader since losing my sight.
Yes, of course.
I wasn't before. I was very busy running my own business for about 40 years.
Yeah.
And had to pack that in. Because I couldn't see anymore. Incidentally, the type of business that I was in did involve commercial transport, and a lot of the Charles Bonnet images that I see do involve lots of lorries going by.
Well, that could well be an explanation. I only hesitate because I've been taught by Professor Fitch that unless it's been researched, we can't say definitely.
No. Well, anyway, thank you very much for allowing me
great
time
pleasure.
To talk to you.
It's a great pleasure.
It's so,
lovely to talk
so useful to be able to contact other people with macula because normal person with normal sight has no idea what you're talking about.
No.
It'd
be useful to have, you know, just a chat with someone on the phone, you know, and then you could say, oh, this has happened to me, and have little chats about one's eyesight in general.
Yes, hello.
But I don't know how one would...
Hello?
I suppose we could...
I think, hello. I mean, there are... Hello?
Yeah, hello.
Hello, who's this?
This is Vi from... Doris.
Oh, hi, Vi. Vi, we've just got someone talking at the moment. If you just hold on 2 seconds, I know,
right.
Vi, we will come back to you. Okay.
Yes, thank you.
I was just saying that there are the and this isn't an Esme's friends group, is it, that I'm talking to?
No, I was talking earlier on about leaflets for. You know,
yes.
Lots of surgeries, but you explained why that wasn't going to happen. It would be so nice. I don't know anyone in this area who has got these macula. Well, mine is due to macula. You know, who sees these Charles Bonnet things.
But I think Devon... Macula. Am I right? Devon Insight is starting an Esme's Friends telephone support group.
I don't know.
If that was true, it would be the first I heard of it. But it is kind of something that we can explore.
I think it might be an idea because there's clearly a lot of people who'd like to chat to each other.
Yes.
On this call, so it might work. I mean, you could join up with Dorset or something.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway,
we will certainly look at that.
I'm sure there are lots of people in the South Devon area, Newton Abbott area and Dawlish. I mean, it's all quite close to me. Yeah.
No, absolutely. Vi, are you still there?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Hello, Vi. Kathy here.
Hello. I just wanted to ask if anyone, when they were losing the sight, I've started losing mine, and I have got the macular disease, and it's the dry one. And I started having hallucinations, but unlike the people I've heard today, I have people, when I've gone to bed, I'm in my garden, and there is about a dozen people pushing my bed all the way round grounds that I've never been.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
And when I'm going along and in the garden... And I see a light come on, and I call my son, because my son lives at home with me, and the light goes off, and nobody comes. And then they'll take me round again under somewhere else, and then when I see the light come on, I call Alan, and he comes in my bedroom and says, "You're still in bed, Mum." I said, "I've been out a long time and I'm cold." And he said, "No, you haven't." He said, "It's one of those twos again, you've got." And another time, I've been out and I've been in a little alleyway where they sell goods, and little alleyways. And they all came and got round me and tried taking my clothes. And I just couldn't get away from them. And it's very frightening.
Vi, can when you say they tried taking your clothes, can you feel them?
No, that is the point. You know, they keep putting their hands out and they grab hold.
But can you feel them hold you? Can you feel them touch you?
No. It just lifts, if you have a lapel or something on your coat, they will lift that up, but you don't actually feel it. But it's very frightening, but sometimes they go away and leave me out in the garden at night. And, you know, there, and then my son comes and has a look and says, "What's the matter? You're still in bed, Mum."
Yeah.
I said,
"Yeah."
"Well, they keep coming." And when I started going to the meetings they've been having down at the Clifton Hotel down in Tynmouth, where that is where the blind people are, and I asked there about it, and the gentleman said, "When you're losing your sight, that's what happens sometimes." And I don't know, does that go on for a long time, or is it something that gradually goes? And it's very frightening.
It is very frightening. Everybody is different. Vi, are you taking... Now, the thing is, we don't really want to go into what medication you might be taking on a public call. I'm just wondering whether, Kathy, it might be an idea for Vi's GP to look at the medication she's taking.
Myself and Vi know each other well. Vi comes along to our 7 Insight Talk and Sport Group in Tynmouth, but I've also worked with Vi in her own home.
Right.
And we've looked at all the information for Esme's umbrella, and we've also looked at other areas just to make sure that we can rule out all other things that may be happening. It looks like this is Charles Bonnet syndrome, or an element. There may well be other things that are happening as well. But Vi, you have such a distressing time with it, and you find it kind of quite difficult to manage. Yes. Although your son is a great support to you as well.
I think Kathy, it might be an idea to speak to the GP and see if one of the medications which can be used should be used, because Vi shouldn't have to be going through this.
May I interrupt you? I went to my doctor's and he gave me some pills which I take every day.
Yeah, and they don't make any difference.
I don't have them so often, but I don't like crowds, I'm afraid, you know. Don't mind going to a meeting, like for the Blind Association.
Yeah.
And, but it's just that I can't stand being in crowds because I feel as if they're all going to come for me.
Yes, yes.
And
I want to get away. Yes, right.
You know,
I think...
sounds silly, really, but...
No, it's not at all.
I think the GP needs to be involved here.
Yeah, he is. Yes, he's
and if
very
the
good.
Does the GP understand about Charles Bonnet syndrome?
Yes.
Well, yes,
good.
That's
fine.
I'm very lucky in that respect because my son looked it up on the internet and everything, and he wrote it all down for me.
It's horrible.
I wonder if anybody has the same thing, and does it last all the time? I'm losing my sight, I know, but I'm in the middle at the moment. I don't know what I've got to do.
No. Well, there's not really anything you can do.
No.
I can't tell you if it'll go away because everybody is different. Everybody's experience is different. I would hope it gets a little easier.
Yes.
I think if you could possibly try... So when you're in bed and this happens, if you try sitting up, clapping your hands, clicking your fingers, turning on the light, it should shunt your brain into another gear, another pathway, so that the hallucination disappears.
It's
worth trying to find something which does that for you.
Sometimes when I go to bed, even the wallpaper is plain. But it's all like ivy leaves, and they're all running up and down.
Yeah, that's very common. That's very common.
And so what I do is I get out of bed and sit on the side. And then when it's sort of... I've always suffered with migraines very badly, and that doesn't help.
No, that doesn't help.
No.
I think... Or maybe try playing music. Some people sing. Anything to distract the brain.
Yes.
So if you could try that, I know it's so easy for me to sit here and try it when I'm not experiencing what you're experiencing, but if you can try, maybe sit up very quickly and click your fingers, clap your hands, something which will just distract the brain.
I think things have got worse because 2 years ago I had shingles very badly. And very badly, and I haven't been able to walk properly, and I go out in a wheelchair now. My son,
right, and I think the lack of, they did prove, Professor Musaji did prove that the lack of exercise doesn't help this condition. Oh. So I think if you can do anything with your legs at all, just, you know, jiggle them up and down, move the top of your body, clap your hands,
shake
your hands.
Because I have had the two falls I've had anyway.
Yeah. Well,
and I've had to be taken to hospital and things like that to see if I had a bleed on the brain. And it was fine. But it's the after effect, really.
Yeah. I'm really sorry to interrupt, but we are actually at the end of our time.
Oh, sorry, I've gone on too long.
No, not at all.
That's why we're here.
Could I just quickly mention one thing?
Yes, please.
I'll be very quick. It's to do with my very first awareness of Charles Bonnet personally, when I lost my sight sometime between 3 and 4 years ago, and I was contacted by the sensory team at Devon County Council. I was contacted by a very nice lady called Nikki Searle, and she visited me on numerous occasions over many months, teaching me largely mobility with my long cane. But she, in one of her very early visits, told me about Charles Bonnet syndrome. And I just wanted to mention that so that you knew that at least Devon County Council sensory team, this information is put out there.
Great. Good. Well, thank you very much indeed for that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you very much.
A pleasure. It's a great pleasure. I am going to have to go on to my next one. So I will say goodbye to everybody. And if I can ever be of any help, contact Esme's umbrella. Thank you, Candice.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
If they didn't have an opportunity to ask their question, then please give me a call. If you call our head office number, which again is 01392 876666, then I will be happy to bring those questions forward to Esme and get the responses back to you. Vi, if you're still here. Vi, are you still here? No, Vi's gone. Okay, I'll catch up with her later. Everybody else, thank you very much for coming along today. I know most people have already signed off. But just to let you know that next week our speaker will be, who will it be? I've forgotten who it's going to be. Nick Collins from Optima, who will talk about the low vision services that they provide. And thank you, everyone, and see you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye. Bye.